A disgrace to the profession. The world scientists, in their own words, on Michael E. Mann, his hockey stick, and their damage to science. Volume 1. Compiled and edited by Mark Stein. Illustrated by Josh. Narrated by Melissa Howes. Published by Stockade Books. All rights reserved. Scientist number 79. Quote, "Excuse me while I puke." Close quote. Dr. Raymond S. Bradley, Ph.D., distinguished professor in the Department of Geosciences and research director of the Climate System Research Center at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Michael E. Mann's co-author on the original two hockey sticks. Co-editor of Climate since A.D. 1500, Routledge, London, 1992. And co-author of Climate Change and Society, Stanley Thorne's Cheltenham, 2001. Mark. What is man looking for in a proxy reconstruction? That's easy. Undeviating loyalty. As a result, even his closest friends and colleagues are not always comfortable with the man's style. Dr. Bradley was there with him at the beginning, the B in MBH 98, the older distinguished scientist who co-authored Mann's original hockey stick. In April 1999, the CRU's Keith Briffa and Tim Osborne were preparing a submission to Science that had the impertinence to mention, quote-unquote, uncertainties in tree ring data. Mann inserted himself into the review process and declared Briffa and Osborne's mild difference of opinion, quote-unquote, unacceptable. Dr. Bradley emailed the editor to distance himself. Quote, "I would like to disassociate myself from Mike Mann's view. As for thinking that it is better than nothing appear than something unacceptable to us, as though we are the gatekeepers of all that is acceptable in the world of paleoclimatology, seems amazingly arrogant. Science moves forward whether we agree with individual articles or not. Sincerely, Raymond S. Bradley." Closed quote. Mark. And yet gatekeeper of all that is acceptable is exactly how Mann saw himself even then, way back in 1999. As the years went by, his determination to exclude any dissenting views from the peer-reviewed literature would grow ever more fierce. But in this instance, his pressure paid off, and the unacceptable was rendered acceptable to him. Quote, "Dear all, thanks for working so hard to ensure a final product that was acceptable to all. I appreciate having had the opportunity to respond to the original draft. I think this opportunity is very important in such cases, i.e. where a particular author group's work is the focus of a commentary by someone else, and hope that this would be considered standard procedure in the future in such instances. I think we have some honest disagreements amongst us about some of the underlying issues, but these were fairly treated in the piece, and that's what is important. The choice of wording in the final version was much better, too. Wording matters! Exclamation point. Thanks all for the hard work and a job well done. I like to think that my feedback helped here, so I take some pride here as well. Best regards, Mike." Close quote. Upon receipt of Mann's email, Professor Bradley sent Keith Briffa a one-line reaction under the subject header, "Vomit." Quote, "Excuse me while I puke. Ray." Close quote. Scientist number 80, quote, "A very misleading message about how resolved this part of the scientific research was." Close quote. Professor Kurt M. Cuffey, Ph.D., Professor of Geography and Martin Distinguished Chair in Ocean, Earth, and Climate Science at the University of California, Berkeley. Recipient of the American Geophysical Union's Masselwain Medal, whose citation notes his pioneering use of borehole thermometry to obtain a temperature calibration of the oxygen isotope record in ice cores. Co-author of The Physics of Glaciers. Author of peer-reviewed papers in Nature, Science, and other journals. Mark. Professor Cuffey was a member of one of the many expert panels Mann claims has quote-unquote, exonerated him. In this case, the NRC investigation. After the report's release, he spoke to the journal Science. Quote, panel members were less sanguine, however, about whether the original work should have loomed so large in the executive summary of the IPCC's 2001 report. The IPCC used it as a visual prominently in the report, says Kurt Coffey, a panel member and geographer at the University of California, Berkeley. I think that sent a very misleading message about how resolved this part of the scientific research was. No individual paper tells the whole story, agrees North. It's very dangerous to pull one fresh paper out from the literature. Close quote. Nature also reported on Professor Coffey's remarks at the press conference. Quote, the committee has less confidence in Mann's conclusion that recent temperatures have set a record for the entire millennium. The committee concluded that Mann and his colleagues underestimated the uncertainty in the earlier part of the record, said Coffey, for which records are of lower quality and fewer in number. In fact, these uncertainties aren't fully quantified, he said. Closed quote. Mark. In the years since, have those uncertainties been resolved in Mann's favor? No. Most papers find greater natural variability, as Professor Coffey well knows. He's the man who demonstrated that temperature changes were much greater than previously assumed, and that the transition from glacial to Holocene conditions was accompanied by a 15 degrees C increase in Greenland, without any assistance from you or your SUV. The press conference continued. Quote, the committee has even less confidence in Mann et al.'s 1999 conclusion that the 1990s are likely the warmest decade and 1998 the warmest year in at least a millennium. That's plausible, said Coffey. We don't know if it's true or not. A year or a decade is just too short an interval for comparison to the older paleo temperature record, he said. Close quote. Mark. And until some new technological advance is made, that is still the case. Mann and his acolytes can produce as many hockey sticks as they want, going back through all of time. And the fact remains, quote, we don't know if it's true or not. Closed quote. Chapter 9. Man Boobs. One Stick Pony. Quote, they show that one of the most important and widely known results of climate analysis, the hockey stick diagram of Mann et al., was based on a mistake. Close quote. Referee for Geophysical Research Letters review of Hockey Sticks, Principal Components, and Spurious Significance, 2005. Mark. In the years since Mann's very first stick, he's produced more sticks. Hockey sticks aren't just for temperature anymore. You can use them for hurricanes and Gulf Streams and reconstructing fake Nobel Prize claims, 1998 to 2008. In 2015, the respected science writer Matt Ridley wrote, quote, in March this year, Dr. Mann published a paper claiming the Gulf Stream was slowing down. This garnered headlines all across the world. Astonishingly, his evidence that the Gulf Stream is slowing down came not from the Gulf Stream, but from proxies which included, yes, bristlecone pine trees in Arizona, upside-down lake sediments in Scandinavia, and larch trees in Siberia. Close quote. Mark. Indeed, the actual observed real-world measurements of the currents over the last two decades' data show the Gulf Stream isn't slowing down, according to a 2014 paper by oceanographer Thomas Rosby, winner of the AGU's Morris Ewing Medal, an inventor of the SOFAR, sound-fixing and ranging float, which in 1973 provided the first dense resolution animation of the deep ocean flow. But obviously that can't begin to compete with Mann and a rub of his magic bristlecone. Mann's Gulf Stream paper didn't make much of a splash. Not much of his science has since those first hockey sticks at the turn of the century. If you do to his hockey stick what he did to Mia Tillander's Finnish sediments and flip it, you have a pretty good graph of his career. At the front, a short, sharp upward blade showing his meteoric rise, and then the long, slow shaft. When someone criticizes man's science, the first response is generally that the criticism is invalid because the critic is, quote-unquote, not a scientist. If it turns out he is a scientist, then it's still dismissible because he's not a climate scientist, even though, as the late physicist Hal Lewis observed, apropos this line, you can't do climate science without physics, but you can certainly do physics without climate science. And if it transpires that he is indeed a climate scientist, he's not the right kind of climate scientist, which is to say, he may know a lot about ocean currents or cloud formation, but he's not a big picture, planet-wide, millennial reconstructionist climate scientist like man. Climate science has changed over the years. A couple of generations back, it was a branch of physical geography. Today, it's computer modeling. When man got into the game, paleoclimatology was a backwater, sneered at by the modelers. Man's genius was to move in and turn paleoclimatology into computer modeling for all space and all time. Instead of wasting months up to your neck in Scandinavian sediments, why not just take everything ever, toss it in the man wood chipper, and see what comes out? In a sense, he invented his art. And therefore, on his defenders' terms, no one is qualified to criticize man. It would be as absurd as a painter or sculptor criticizing Damien Hirst's prize-winning dead sheep preserved in formaldehyde. What does Rembrandt know of formaldehyde? Where are Titan's credentials on ovine preservation? There are peer-reviewed studies by over 750 scientists from over 450 research institutions in over 40 countries that have found a medieval warm period of between 0.1 degree and 3.0 degrees Celsius warmer than today in every corner of the globe, from Alaska to South Africa, Morocco to New Zealand, Bolivia to China, Egypt to New Guinea. Everywhere they look for it, they find it. But when it's all processed into Mike's worldwide paleo proxy palooza, it vanishes every time. And don't you dare question it, because Mike's whole is always greater than the sum of everybody else's parts. Fun things happen to all that boringly local data along the way. In their original 2003 paper, McIntyre and McKittrick found that man had reassigned an instrumental precipitation record from Paris to New England, an error for which McIntyre channeled, "My Fair Lady, quote, the rain in Maine falls mainly in the Seine, S-E-I-N-E, close quote." McIntyre subsequently discovered that what man declares as a South Carolina grid cell in NBH-98 appears to be from Toulouse, and what man credits as a Bombay set appears to be from Philadelphia. Close enough! When you're bestriding the planet like a colossus, who cares about assigning the right data to the right continent? The Parisian rain in Maine went uncorrected all the way up to man's 2007 paper. A year or so later, McIntyre noticed that man had reassigned a Spanish dataset to Tanzania. The rain in Spain falls mainly on the East African plain. This time, man was forced to correct the error and recalculate, although in breach of Penn State's code of conduct, he did not credit McIntyre as the source of the correction. Man's usual line when forced to admit he bungled something is that his various errors never make any difference to his big picture. So it's worth noting that correcting just that one itsy-bitsy dataset and moving it back from East Africa to the Iberian Peninsula raised his estimated temperature by half a degree Celsius for the entire 18th century. It makes one wonder what the graph might look like if he corrected all his boobs. Scientist number 81. Quote, Mike is misleading. Mike does not properly distinguish. Mike is in error. Mike misses the point. Closed quote. Dr. Roger Pilkey, Sr., Ph.D., Emeritus Professor at Colorado State University's Department of Atmospheric Science and Senior Research Scientist at the Cooperative Institute for Research in Environmental Sciences at Colorado University, Boulder. Fellow of the American Meteorological Society and former chairman of its Committee on Weather Forecasting and Analysis. Fellow of the American Geophysical Union. Pioneered development of the Regional Atmospheric Modeling System. Former research scientist at NOAA's Experimental Meteorology Lab. Former editor-in-chief of the U.S. National Science Report. Chief editor of Monthly Weather Review and co-chief editor of the Journal of Atmospheric Sciences. Mark. Man is nothing if not boundlessly confident. But a 2012 interview with Scientific American gave a glimpse of how hermetically sealed from reality is his science. Dr. Pilkey responded at his website, quote, Mike is misleading in his defense of multi-decadal climate models predictions as a robust scientific tool to forecast changes in climate statistics decades from now. Mike does not properly distinguish between the types of modeling. When airplanes or cars are built, the engineers are testing their models using real-world airplanes and cars, as well as with wind tunnel evaluations. They can ground truth their models. With respect to atmospheric modeling, numerical modeling prediction of the weather for the coming days is ground truthing, as the forecast can be compared with real-world observations just a few days later. With multi-decadal climate predictions, they can only realistically be tested from past climate conditions, unless we wait for the coming decades to pass. Even in the hindcast mode, however, the global climate models, whether downscaled to regions or not, have failed to predict changes in the statistics of regional climate. Mike is in error. With the Higgs boson, its existence, the theory, is being tested against real-world data. With the prediction of climate change, even with coarse metrics such as the magnitude of global warming as diagnosed by changes in the heat content of the climate system, these global average forecasts on the verge of failing. Example C. With respect to the prediction of multi-decadal changes in regional climate statistics, which are needed by the impact community, these models have failed so far to show any skill. Mike misses the point that this knowledge of physics does not then result in skillful global and regional predictions of changes in climate statistics. The climate system is much more than just changes in the atmospheric concentration of CO2 and a few other greenhouse gases. Mike is misunderstanding the way models are used. He is confusing tested and verified model predictions with unverified model results. Closed quote. Scientist number 82. Quote, just bad science. Closed quote. Dr. David S. Chapman, Ph.D., Dr. Marshall G. Bartlett, Ph.D., and Dr. Robert N. Harris, Ph.D. David S. Chapman is Distinguished Professor Emeritus, and Robert N. Harris is Adjunct Associate Professor in the Department of Geology and Geophysics at the University of Utah. Marshall G. Bartlett, formerly at the University of Utah, is Chairman of the Science Department at the Hockaday School in Texas. Mark. In 2003, Geophysical Research Letters unveiled Mann and Gavin Schmidt's paper, Ground versus Surface Air Temperature Trends, Implications for Borehole Surface Temperature Reconstructions. In April the following year, they published Drs. Chapman, Bartlett, and Harris comment on Mann and Schmidt's work. For a peer-reviewed scientific journal, Chapman, Bartlett, and Harris's language was unusually forceful. Quote, borehole temperatures respond to an integrated continuous time series of temperature at the Earth's surface. Harris and Chapman, 1998. Furthermore, the process of heat conduction smooths out high-frequency temperature fluctuations, so subsurface temperature profiles contain information on average surface temperatures over decade-to-century timescales, depending on the depth of a particular anomaly. It is these characteristics, direct measurement of temperature, sensitivity to a continuous rather than a discontinuous or seasonal time series, and low-pass filtering that makes borehole temperature analysis such a useful complement of climate change studies. When Mann and Schmidt, 2003, break their model output time series into warm season and cold season series, the results may be of interest to seasonal investigations, but have little relevance to, and are misleading in, the comparison of GST, ground surface temperature, and SAT, surface air temperature tracking. A second misleading analysis made by Mann and Schmidt 2003 concerns inappropriate use of endpoints in reaching a numerical conclusion. In their paper, Mann and Schmidt focus on the model period, 1971 to 1998, in which significant warming takes place. They state, quote, during a period of coincident surface warming and cold season snow cover decrease in the model 1971 to 1998 mean, GST increases are 0.2 degrees Celsius less than those in SAT, a consequence of greater exposure of the ground surface to winter cold air outbreaks. Interpretations of past SAT trends from borehole-based GST reconstructions may therefore be substantially biased by seasonal influences and snow cover changes. Close quote. Mann and Schmidt, 2003, paragraph 1. The 0.2 degrees Celsius difference in this period is misleading. It is based on using endpoints in computing changes in an oscillating time series and is just bad science. For example, had they chosen the time period 1975 to 1996, the equally erroneous endpoint analysis would have led to an opposite conclusion that GST changes are 0.14 degrees Celsius more than the SAT changes. The third misleading conclusion reached by Mann and Schmidt 2003 is that, quote, snow cover and preconditioning of the ground by prior warm season SAT exhibits a sizable and in places dominant influence, close quote, on cold season GST, R equals 0.7, thereby apparently degrading tracking between SAT and GST. Mann and Schmidt, 2003, paragraph 1. Close quote. Scientist number 83. Quote, the data used in Mann et al. 2008 does not allow reliable temperature prediction. Close quote. Professor Lars Holmström, Ph.D., professor in the University of Oulu's Department of Mathematical Sciences, author of peer-reviewed papers published in the Journal of Applied Statistics, the Annals of Applied Statistics, the Journal of Geophysical Research, the Holocene, the Journal of Statistical Computation and Simulation, and other journals. Mark. In 2011, in a discussion of the McShane and Weiner paper, Professor Holmström wrote in the Annals of Applied Statistics, quote, this McShane and Weiner is an impressive paper. The authors present a thorough examination of the ability of various climate proxies to predict temperature. The prediction method is one much used in climate science literature and assumes a linear relationship between the proxies and the temperature. The idea is to use instrumental temperature data together with the corresponding proxy records to estimate a regression model to which historical proxy values are then input in order to produce a backcast of past temperature variation. The authors demonstrate convincingly that the data used in Mann et al. 2008 does not allow reliable temperature prediction using this approach, and that purely random artificial proxy records, in fact, perform equally well or even better. Close quote. Mark. That was a reference to Mann's 2008 paper called Proxy-Based Reconstructions of Hemispheric and Global Surface Temperature Variations Over the Past Two Millennia. Close quote. Yet another retilling of familiar soil. The following year, he decided to try something different, a so-called hurricane hockey stick, written with Jonathan Woodruff of the University of Massachusetts, Jeffrey Donnelly of Woods Hole, and Xiao Zhang, also of Penn State. As usual, however, Mann couldn't resist overselling the product, to the irritation of a genuine hurricane man, Dr. Christopher Lancey. Quote, what is curious, too, is the press release issued at Penn State that concluded, it seems that the paleo data support the contention that greenhouse warming may increase the frequency of Atlantic tropical storms, said Mann. It may not be just that the storms are stronger, but that there may be more of them as well. Why would such a strong statement be included in a press release that isn't even discussed in the paper? Would the paper's co-authors agree with this very public pronouncement about the implications of the work? Close quote. Mark. That would seem unlikely, given that in Nature in 2007, Woodruff and Donnelly's review of 5,000 years of hurricane activity had found no evidence of any greenhouse gas connection. Was this another example of man pushing his colleagues beyond where we know is right? Scientist number 84. Quote, the paper comes to very erroneous conclusions because of using improper data and illogical techniques. Close quote. Dr. Christopher Lancey, Ph.D., Science and Operations Officer at the U.S. National Hurricane Center, recipient of the Banner Miller Award from the American Meteorological Society for Best Contribution to the Science of Hurricane and Tropical Weather Forecasting, and of the NOAA Administrator's Award for establishing NOAA's first U.S. Weather Research Program testbed. Former chair of the AMS Committee on Tropical Meteorology and Tropical Cyclone. Member of the American Geophysical Union and the American Meteorological Society. Mark. Dr. Lancey's problem with man's hurricane hockey stick went beyond the press release. Quote, dear Michael and Tropical Storm folks, I have some additional concerns about this new paper. The two gravest issues are the paper's use of the Atlantic Basin tropical storm frequency data without consideration of new studies and the merger of the paleotempestology record to the historical storm data. Close quote. Mark. The first issue was that man had disregarded research showing that thanks to improvements in observations, whereas 3 to 4 tropical storms a year were missed in the late 19th century, by the 1960s, it was only 1 per year. Likewise, recent research indicated that 2/3 of the supposed increase in storms were what Dr. Lancey called shorties of less than 2 days' duration. Quote, taking out these shorties, very likely due just to our vastly improved observational capabilities from the record, and adding in the estimated number of missed medium to long-lived tropical storms, causes the long-term trend to completely disappear. This isn't a small quibble. It's the difference between a massive trend with doubling in the last 100 years versus no trend, with only multi-decadal variability remaining. This new peer-reviewed research should not have been ignored completely. Close quote. Mark, and yet again, man was mixing observational apples and paleo bananas. Quote, the merging of the paleo record with the historical all-basin tropical storm counts is very problematic. Instead of trying to upscale the paleotempestology data to all-basin tropical cyclone activity, an apples-to-apples comparison directly of paleo landfall data to historical 1851 to today hurricane-only landfall data should have been performed. Not surprisingly, the historical landfall record for those 5 sites shows no trend. How could this be considered a homogeneous comparison? Landfall of primarily major hurricanes at 5 locations versus all-basin tropical storm and hurricane numbers whose trend is mainly due to very short-lived, weak tropical storms that we simply couldn't observe decades ago? The bottom line is that the paper comes to very erroneous conclusions because of using improper data and illogical techniques. In my opinion, this work is unfortunately a step backwards in helping climate researchers understand how hurricanes have changed over the last several centuries. Part 13. Part 14.